Dear listeners, Sai Ram and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. Our beautiful series on every Thursday evening where we spend time reading, assimilating, understanding what Bhagwan has given us in the form of Vahinis. And after so many weeks of Prema Vahini, we are now in Sandeha Nivarini. We are in the 10th chapter of Sandeha Nivarini. We have already spent a few weeks in the first two segments of chapter 10, we are now in segment 10.3, the third segment of chapter 10. We already had one session on this segment, but there is so much more for us to reflect on in this segment. So today, let's listen once again to segment 10.3, and then we will take off from where we left in the previous session when we were discussing this. So with prayers to Bhagwan to guide us and to help us not only understand but also implement these things in our daily life, let's begin this session. Let me play for you segment 10.3.
But Swami, you mentioned only japam, dhyanam, bhajana, etc. Some advanced persons adopt maunam, the vow of silence. Of what use is it? What exactly is maunam?
The illumination of the soul is maunam. How can there be maunam without the atma being illuminated? Without that, merely keeping the mouth shut is not silence. Some adopt the vow of silence, but communicate writing on paper or slate, or the eye points successively to the letters of the alphabet on a chart. All this is behavioral silence. It is only another way of talking without interruption. There is no need to attain silence. Silence is ever with you. What you have to do is only to remove all things that disturb it.
But many persons do not open their mouth to speak. You mean that this is useless?
Who said so? If you do not use the tongue, if you are silent in order to keep out the external obstacles to sadhana, you certainly can develop your thoughts. You can desist from disturbing others. You can escape criticism and worry from others. You will get concentration. Your brain will be saved from unnecessary burden, and it can improve in many ways. With such a brain, you carry on smarana of the Lord's name better. All these advantages you will realize when you do this sadhana.
Then, is all this unnecessary for the complete jnani?
There is no complete jnani in the world. He is in no need of the world itself. Then why does he need all this?
If that is so, who are those people called jnanis?
The silent men I spoke about just now. Jnani is a term applied by courtesy. A full jnani is non-existent in the world. The jnani must know all as one. Your jnanis are all either experts in logic or experts in the knowledge of the world. They have not known the reality.
Who are the real jnanis?
He who knows the Atma as Atma will know himself as milk added to milk, oil to oil, or water to water. When the physical body dies, they likewise merge in the Atma. But some may have some traits still persisting. They continue to have some resolutions and desires. Until these are exhausted as per their will, they will wander in the world. Such men are called also bits of divinity born as men, Daivamsha Sambhutas. This is also as per the Lord's will.
Why should this difference arise, Swami?
It arises out of each one's sadhana and sankalpa. Eat a mango and you will belch its smell. How can you prevent it? The belch brings the perfume of the thing eaten.
Will such men too need a body as a upadhi?
Without upadhis, how can work get on? They too have it, but only in a subtle form, until they attain transcorporeal mukti or videha mukti.
What is that, Swami?
Their acts are like the line drawn on water, seen while the line is being drawn, absent as soon as it is finished. While being done, you notice it. In an instant, it is not noticeable anymore.
Swami, you said that a jnani has renunciation as his hallmark. How does this agree with that?
That is true. Renunciation is his hallmark. If out of the traits of previous birth he gets attached, he must know that it is only for the body and not for him. This attachment damages the bliss of Jivan Mukti. Jnana is most important for Videha Mukti.
Even if one has no jnana, can one attain mukti by mere vairagyam?
What a foolish question! How can the fruit be sweet without ripening? Vairagyam cannot arise except from jnana. There is no moksha without vairagyam. Be sure of that.
So that is what is there in segment 10.3. If we reflect on what Bhagwan has been telling us in this chapter, it began with Bhagwan telling the Bhakta, "You look so full of joy today." And then the Bhakta saying, "Yes, I always try to be joyous, Swami." And then Swami says, "Why do you say you are trying? Does not sorrow flee instantly once reality is known?" That's what Bhagwan says. And from there on, the discussion starts when Bhagwan tells the Bhakta about the reality of the world. And he talks about the I, the principle of I and the Atma, and how one has to realize the I consciousness. And only when one realizes the I consciousness can one get out of the cycle of birth and death. So that is what Bhagwan tells the Bhakta in the first segment. And Bhagwan goes on to say that it is only when you have so many eyes that you need someone's support. When all is one, why seek help? Until that aham or that I fades out, this speaking I and this listening, you have to be there. When that I is gone, whom to speak to, who listens, all are one. So Bhagwan was saying that once that I consciousness really comes, then you will not see any diversity in creation. Everything becomes just one. And Bhagwan explains this further through the ideas of Chidabhasa, Chittakasha, Bhutakasha. We dealt all of this in the previous episodes when we were contemplating on segment 10.2. And there it concludes, segment 10.2 concludes saying that one has to enter into that stage of inquiry. Only when you enter that stage of inquiry will you be able to come out of these worldly associations and be in that consciousness, the I consciousness. And everything, the japa, dhyana, puja, parayana, Swami says, everything is towards that, steadily to make us ripe and become capable of understanding the I by inquiry into the reality. And then in segment 10.3, the Bhakta says, "Swami, you mentioned that japam, dhyanam, bhajana, all of these sadhanas are done to become ripe, but there are some people who do maunam. And that is when Bhagwan goes on to say this beautiful statement that the illumination of the soul is Maunam. How can one be in Maunam, in silence, without the Atma being illuminated? And then says that a lot of people keep their mouth shut, they don't talk. That does not mean that they are practicing the sadhana of Maunam. In fact, one whole session I shared with you, beautiful interactions with Bhagwan, with students, just to share how beautifully Bhagwan conveyed this whole idea of what is Maunam and how just not producing sound from the mouth does not lead to Maunam. How there has to be so much of quietness within if one has to really practice this Maunam. And so when the Bhakta asks Swami, so if you are saying that, you know, just by not talking, one does not practice Maunam, then is that a waste of effort, that whole practice of not speaking and keeping quiet? Then Bhagwan says, no, I never mentioned that. If you don't talk too much, definitely it will help you, because you will not be disturbing others. You will be escaping from criticizing others. You will get more concentration. Your brain definitely will have better IQ because you are not using your brain recklessly. So Bhagwan says this, yes, by not talking, it is good. But that is not what is Maunam. But once you keep quiet, definitely it will help you in your sadhana. With a brain that is quiet, you can carry on the Namasmarana of the Lord's name better. So all of this will help. And then the Bhakta asks, then is all this unnecessary for the complete Jnani? Which means if someone is a realized soul, does that person really need to do all this? And that's where Bhagwan says that there is no complete Jnani in the world. There is no realized, self-realized soul in the world. The people whom we think today in the world are realized souls, they are just experts in a particular field. They're experts in logic, they're experts in a particular branch of knowledge. That's all. They have not known the reality. Then the Bhakta asks, then you tell me, Bhagwan, who are the real Jnanis, so the real realized souls? And that's where Bhagwan gives this example of milk being added to milk, oil being added to oil, water being added to water. One who knows the Atma as Atma will know himself. They will know himself as easily as milk merging with milk and oil merging with oil and water merging with water. And there Swami says that there are souls like this who are called Devamsa Sambhutas. They are sparks of the divine. They are bits of divinity born as men. And these people are in the world as per the Lord's will. And they are there in the world, but the world does not affect them. Their acts are like the line drawn on water, Swami says. If you draw a line on the water, it does not stay. The moment the line is drawn, the next moment the line vanishes. That is how they are so unattached, unaffected with the world. These people, these Evamsa Sambhutas, these incarnations, divine incarnations, they could be partial incarnations, they could be souls born with divine blessings for a specific purpose. And for all these people, for such jnanis, renunciation is the hallmark, Swami says. Vairagya, renunciation is the hallmark. They could be born because of one or two things they would have done in the previous birth. But once they get rid of that attachment, then they get complete mukti, and that attachment, getting rid of that attachment happens through vairagya, absolute renunciation, and that absolute renunciation, vairagyam, can happen only through inquiry and wisdom. So this is what Bhagwan says in this segment. In fact, when I heard the word Daivamsha Sambhutas, bits of divinity, there are people who are realized souls who have taken birth with divine blessings for specific purposes, and perhaps there are one or two things, attachments, that they need to get rid of, and then they have complete freedom. But even as they are there on the earth, they are here in a manner that nothing gets attached to them. Their acts are as transitory as a line drawn on water, line down in the air, Swami says. And that is how whatever they do is above the world. And as I was reading this, for some reason, I just kept thinking of Swami Vivekananda, because to me, his life was one such. They say that one day when Vivekananda, or Narendra as he was called when he was a child, he was fighting with his playmates as a child, and he accidentally fell from the porch, and his head got struck against a stone, and that led to a lot of bleeding. And because of that, there was a permanent scar over his right eye. They say years later, when Ramakrishna Paramahansa heard about this incident, he said, in a way, it was a good thing. If he had not thus lost some of his blood, he would have created havoc in the world with his excessive energy. I mean, this is just to show the kind of powerful personality that Swami Vivekananda was, and how his life was a life which was blessed by the divine to fulfill a specific purpose, and it was a life of renunciation. If you go to his childhood, there are many amazing instances. One day he wished to set up a heavy trapeze in the gymnasium, and so he asked the help of some people who were there, and among them was an English sailor, they say. And the trapeze fell down and knocked the sailor unconscious. And the crowd there thought that sailor has knocked out, he's probably dead. And they thought, oh my God, this unforeseen thing has happened, now the police will come. And they left the place. They didn't want to be around because they thought they could be questioned by the police. But Narendra, who was there, he tore a piece from his own shirt, bandaged the sailor's wound, washed his face with water, and tried to revive him. Then he moved that wounded man to a neighboring house. He nursed him for a week, and when the sailor had recovered, Narendra sent him away with some money which he collected from his friends. So there were so many such beautiful traits of Narendra which people saw as it emerged during his childhood. He used to always be fascinated with a monk. When he used to see a monk, he used to always be so curious. In fact, when one day he saw a wandering monk, Narendra told his friends, look at this line on the palm of my hand. I shall certainly become a sannyasin. I shall one day certainly become a renunciant. And as he grew into adolescence, his temperament showed a marked change. He became keen about intellectual matters. He read serious books on history and literature. He devoured newspapers and attended public meetings. Music was his favorite pastime. And he insisted that it should express a soft idea and arouse the feelings of devotion. That is what music should do. At the age of 15, Narendra experienced his first spiritual ecstasy. The family was journeying to Raipur in the central provinces, and part of the trip had to be done in a bullock cart. And on that day, the air was crisp and clear, and the trees and the creepers were covered with green leaves and many colored blossoms. There were birds of brilliant plumage who were wobbling in the woods. And as this bullock cart was moving along a narrow pass where the lofty peaks were seen rising on the two sides, it almost seemed like the peaks were about to touch each other. And Narendra saw a large beehive in the cleft of a giant cliff. And when he saw that beehive, the way that beehive had formed in that giant cliff, in that little gap of that cliff, he suddenly felt, wow, how amazing is this creation. He was filled with awe and reverence for the divine, for the divine providence, for the divine magnificence of everything around. And just that thought, just that scene filled him with so much awe that he just lost consciousness. He lost outer consciousness. And he just was in that state for a long time in the cart. He was blissed out. In that moment of deep connection with the divine. Even when he returned back to his senses, he was just in bliss. And for Devamsha Sambhutas, for people, you know, who are divine incarnations, who are blessed by the divine to see the divinity everywhere around, it is nothing unusual for them to just go into ecstasies, because everything, as they look around, they see the play of the divine, they see the glory of the divine, they see the beauty of the divine. And there are so many such beautiful traits that was witnessed in Swami Vivekananda. From boyhood, when he would see certain people or places, he would always feel that he had known them before. And he would say, I don't know for how long, but I know these people before, I know this place before. One day when he and some of his friends were in a room in a friend's house, they were discussing some topics, something was mentioned, and Narendra felt that he had on a previous occasion talked about the same subject with the self same friends in that very house. You know, he used to have these epiphanies, and he even started describing every nook and corner of the building he had never seen before. So at first, you know, he was trying to explain all this through the doctrine of reincarnation. Maybe he had lived in that house in a previous life or something. But later he concluded that maybe he must have had pre-visions, earlier visions of the people, places and events that he was to experience in this present incarnation. And that's why the moment he goes anywhere, he's able to recognize the people, the places. Once at Raipur, he was encouraged by his father to meet notable scholars and discuss with them various intellectual topics, which generally were considered too obtuse for boys of his age. But on that occasion, he exhibited such great mental power From his father, he had learned the art of grasping the essentials of things, seeing the truth from the widest and the most comprehensive standpoint, coming to the essence of things in a trice. In 1879, the family returned to Kolkata, and Narendra, within a short span of time, graduated from his high school, and he excelled as well in his academics as always. Meanwhile, he had read many standard books of English and Bengali literature. He loved history. In fact, he had a very unusual method of reading a book and acquiring the knowledge what is there in the subject matter. In fact, he himself says, "I could understand an author without reading every line of his book. I would read the first and the last lines of a paragraph and grasp its meaning. Later, I found that I could understand the subject matter by reading only the first and the last lines of a page." I mean, that is how sharp he was. He had to only read the first and the last line of a page and he would get the essence of what is being conveyed. I mean, he would know what is the line of thought and the trend of a writer's argument by just reading a few lines here and there. They say in his youth he used to see every night two visions, and both visions were utterly dissimilar in nature. He would see these visions before he fell asleep. One was that of a worldly man with an accomplished wife and children and enjoying the wealth, the luxuries, fame and social position, having all the good things of life. And the other was that of a sannyasin, a wandering monk, bereft of earthly security, but completely devoted to the contemplation of God. And it used to occur to him that he had the power to realize both. He had the choice to realize both. And he was always drawn to the second option. Inevitably, he would be drawn to the life of renunciation. The glamour of the world would just fade and disappear. His deeper self instinctively chose the austere path. And the story goes about how Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa was waiting for him, and how when Ramakrishna Paramahansa heard him, he was in ecstasy, and how Ramakrishna Paramahansa used to pine for him to come, and how he prepared him for the mission that was ahead. In those initial days when Narendra wanted a job and finally got a temporary job, but that job was not sufficient to meet all the demands of the family. It was just a hand-to-mouth living for the family. And they say how once Narendra asked himself, why can't the Divine Mother, why can't Mother Kali, who constantly listens to the prayers of my master, why can't she not remove my poverty? Why can't my master pray to Mother Kali and tell her to ensure that I am out of this state, that I am prosperous? So he went and told Sri Ramakrishna about this idea. And Ramakrishna said, very good, very good. Yes, yes, the mother can do anything that you want. But why do you want me to do? Why don't you only go? You only go and pray to the mother. And the master says, see, today is a Tuesday. It's Mangalwar. It's auspicious day for the mother's worship. You go to the shrine in the evening. You prostrate yourself before the image. And you ask her whatever boon you want. Mother will give it. Don't worry. She is the embodiment of love and compassion. She is the power of Brahman. She gives birth to the world by her mere wish. So your prayer she will immediately fulfill. Don't worry. every sincere prayer of every devotee mother fulfills. So you go and ask whatever you want. And so at 9 o'clock in the evening, Narendra goes to the Kali temple. And as he passes through the courtyard, he is feeling within himself this surge of emotion. And his heart is actually leaping with joy in anticipation of the vision of the mother that he's going to get. You know, he's going to ask and mother is going to bless, because this is what master has told, this is going to happen. All his sorrows will come to an end. So he enters the temple and he goes into the sanctorum. He casts his eyes upon the image of the mother. And he sees that it is the stone figure of the mother. Is it the living goddess? And as he sees that it is not just the stone figure. He feels the living presence of the mother there. It is the living goddess. He feels that the divine mother herself there. And the mother is ready to give him any boon that he wants. Whatever he wants. He wants a happy worldly life. He wants spiritual life. He wants a renunciant's life. He wants the joy of spiritual freedom. Whatever he wants, mother is ready to give. And he stands there. And he prays to the mother, "Oh mother, give me mukti, give me bhakti, give me virakti, give me the boon of wisdom, give me the boon of discrimination, give me the boon of renunciation." And he asks these boons and he comes back. And the master asks, "Hey Narendra, did you ask what you wanted?" And Vivekananda says, "Oh my God, Master, I don't know what. Once I went inside and I saw the mother, I just forgot everything and I asked for renunciation, I asked for discrimination, I asked for wisdom, I forgot to ask for money." And the Master says, "What a fool you are. The mother was there. You could have asked her what you wanted. You lost the chance. Doesn't matter. You go again. And this time don't forget. Ask whatever you want. Everything. Mother can give you anything that you want. Don't forget." And the master coaxes him to go again. And Swami Vivekananda goes again. And he stands there. And when he's seeing the mother, again the same thing happens. He stands before the mother and says, "Ma, mujhe mukti dijiye, mujhe bhakti dijiye, mujhe virakti dijiye." He says, "Oh mother, give me that discrimination. Give me that renunciation. Give me that devotion." That's all he prays for. And with tears in his eyes, he just comes out. And again Ramakrishna says, Did you ask money? Did you ask mother for money? Better job? And he says, "Oh master, I don't know what. Once I go inside, I just forget all of these things. I don't know why. I just asked for only renunciation and knowledge." And the master says, "What a fool you are. You go inside and you forget everything that you're supposed to do. Go again. Mother is waiting. She will give whatever you want. Why you come and tell me that I should go and ask the mother, you want money, you want better job? Go and tell the mother, she will get it done." And again Narendra goes. And the same beautiful thing happens. She stands in front of the mother and she says, "Oh mother, give me wisdom, give me renunciation." That is how the life of a Devamsha Sambhuta is. And that is when Narendra realized that this is the life that is what is meant for him. And Ramakrishna says to him, "What is destined for you is a glorious life, not a life which just meets the worldly needs. Your life is not just a little lamp, it is like the sun. With time, we know how Narendra imbibed these precious directions that he got from the master. He went to the US. He addressed the Parliament of Religions. In fact, it is because of Swami Vivekananda that the world knows about Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa. Once he returned, there were so many people who were inspired by Swami Vivekananda's fiery words and they joined the Ramakrishna order. When he was abroad, there were four others who were practicing disciplines in the monastery. Under the guidance of older Swamijis, there were other Swamijis. And now they wanted monastic initiation from Swami Vivekananda. And one brother disciple told Swami Vivekananda that, you know, this other brother who is there, I don't know whether that person should be given initiation by you because this is his past, this is what he had done before. And the moment he said that, Swami Vivekananda said, what is this? If we as renunciants, if we shrink from sinners, if we do not want to help them, who else will save them? And if someone has taken refuge at the monastery, he has this interest to lead a better life. His intentions are good. And we, as renunciants, must help him. How can we even get such a doubt? If we think his character is not good, why have we put on ochre robes if we cannot work to change him? In fact, addressing all the monks in the monastery, once Ramakrishna Paramahansa said, remember, for the salvation of his soul and for the good and happiness of many, a sannyasin, a renunciant, is born in the world. To sacrifice his own life for others, to elevate the misery of millions, rending the air with their cries, to wipe away tears from the eyes of widows, to console the hearts of bereaved mothers, to provide the ignorant and depressed masses with ways and means for the struggle of existence and make them stand on their own feet, to broadcast the teachings of the scriptures to one and all, to arouse the sleeping lion of Brahman in the hearts of all beings by the knowledge of Vedanta. It is for all these purposes that a sannyasin is born in the world. Remember, it is for the consummation of this purpose in life that we have taken birth, and we will lay down our lives for it. Arise, awake, arouse and awaken others. Fulfill your mission in life and you will reach the highest goal. This is how Swami Vivekananda exhorted his brother disciples. He said, you must renounce everything. You must not seek comfort or pleasure for yourself. You must look upon gold and objects of lust as poison. You must look upon gold and such worldly things, name and fame, as filth. You must think about this worldly glory and the pride of birth, of social position. These are all like getting drunk. These are like liquor. The first duty of the inmates of the monastery, Swami Vivekananda said, was renunciation. Bhagwan says renunciation is the hallmark of a jnani, and this is what Swami Vivekananda stressed. Never forget service to the world and realization of God. These are the two ideals of the monk. This is what the exhortation of Swami Vivekananda was. Service to the world and realization of God. He would say, stick to them. The monastic is the most immediate of the paths. The goal of any sannyasin is to never forget that one is here only to serve the world and one is here only to realize God. There was a disciple who wanted to practice spiritual discipline for his own salvation. And there Swami Vivekananda says, you will go to hell if you seek only your own salvation. Seek the salvation of others. If you want to reach the highest, seek the salvation of others. Don't have this desire for personal mukti, personal salvation. Kill out, he said. Kill this desire for personal mukti. Work with your whole heart and soul for everyone. Does not matter if you go to hell only working for others. That is worth more than to gain heaven by seeking your own salvation. He used to say that. Sri Ramakrishna came and gave his life for the world. And this is how we must sacrifice our life for the world. He told this brother disciple, you, every one of you, you should do the same. He said, believe me, from the shedding of our lifeblood will arise gigantic heroic workers and warriors of God who will revolutionize the whole world. You must try to combine in your life immense idealism with immense practicality. You must be prepared to go into deep meditation now, and the next moment you should be able to go and work in the fields. You must be prepared to explain the intricacies of the scriptures, and the next moment you should be able to go and sell the produce of the fields in the market. The next moment you should be able to go and lift a man who's suffering in the corner of the street. A true man is one who is strong as strength itself, yet possesses a woman's heart. As you read the life of Swami Vivekananda, you feel so charged up how the life of a man of God should be. The Devamsa Sambhutas are such people. Swami says, such jnanis. Just because you take the vow of silence, you don't talk, that doesn't mean that you have become a jnani. To become a jnani, you should have this hallmark. This hallmark of renunciation. And this is the kind of life that one must be able to lead to become a true jnani. And this can come only through vairagya. Through renunciation. And that vairagya happens through inquiry. Bhagwan used to narrate the story of Sri Adi Shankara. Once when Adi Shankara was on his victory march, he had a debate with Mandana Mishra on the principles of Vedanta. And before the commencement of the debate, they had to appoint a judge to decide the winner. And Sri Adi Shankara, who was a Trikala Jnani, who knew the past, present and future. In fact, if you look at the lives of Swami Vivekananda and Swami Adi Shankara, both of them had very, very few years of their life on earth. Both of them left the world when they were in just 30s. But they roamed around the entire country. It was Adi Shankara who actually consolidated all the principles of Sanatana Dharma. He established so many mutts, the Char Dhams that we talk about. We talk about the resurrection of hundreds of places of worship. It's almost reviving the Sanatana Dharma. Everything happened because of Adi Shankara. And he did it, you know, when he was just, he was on the earth just for 30 years. And the same with Swami Vivekananda. So, coming back to this debate, Adi Shankara and Mandana Mishra. So there has to be a judge to announce the winner of the debate. And then Adi Shankara says, Mandana Mishra, your wife Ubhaya Bharati is the right person to perform the role of a judge. That is the kind of faith Adi Shankara had in the nobility and the ability of Ubhaya Bharati. Normally, a wife will always take the side of her husband, but Adi Shankara knew the excellent personality of Ubhaya Bharati. He knew that she is totally impartial. She had no differences of mine and thine. And the debate went on for a long time, and ultimately Mandana Mishra was defeated. Ubhaya Bharati gave the judgment without any hesitation. And when Mandana Mishra heard the judgment, as per the rules agreed upon before, he immediately became a renunciant, Mandana Mishra. That was the condition of the debate. Now, once Mandana Mishra became a renunciant because he lost the argument, Ubhaya Bharati also followed her husband. She said, "I am Ardhangini, I am the better half of Mandana Mishra, so therefore I also will become a renunciant." And once they took to that path, they started leading lives of how sannyasins should lead their life. And one day, Ubhaya Bharati was going along with her disciples to the river Ganga to take bath. On the way, she observed a renunciant relaxing and keeping a dried bottle gourd under his head. He was using this for storing drinking water. And because he was using for that purpose, he was preserving it very carefully. And Ubhaya Bharati saw this renunciant's attachment to that bottle gourd and told her disciples, "Look, this man calls himself a renunciant, but he's attached to a bottle gourd. He keeps it under his head as a pillow." And the renunciant heard this comment, but he did not say anything at that point in time. When Ubhaya Bharati and her disciples returned from the river, this renunciant threw away the bottle gourd in front of them just to let them know that he was not attached to it. And when Ubhaya Bharati noticed this, she very aptly remarked, "I thought that there was only one defect in him, attachment. But now I realize that he has another defect. He has also ahankara. He has ego. How can one with ego and attachment become one with the divine? How can one with attachment and ego become a jnani and a renunciant?" When Ubhaya Bharati mentioned that, the renunciant realized his folly. It was eye-opening for him. He expressed gratitude to Ubhaya Bharati for imparting her true knowledge and fell at the feet of Ubhaya Bharati and said, "Mother, since there is no one to teach such profound truths, I was misled. I know what is the life of a true renunciant. From today, you are my guru." So the life of a renunciant is what is the hallmark of a Devamsa Sambhuta. In fact, in one discourse, Bhagwan says that among the various types of sadhana, there is one sadhana called mumukshatva. Mumukshatva has been explained by some people by saying that, you know, when your own house is burning, all attempts on one's part to save oneself from burning the house is called mumukshatva. What it means is that when one is burning in this fire of karma, entangled in the cycle of birth and death, to be able to rescue oneself from this fire and save oneself is mumukshatva. And Swami says the only way to save oneself is to have that detachment. Not think that some people belong to you and some people do not belong to you. To know that there is only one truth. the sadhana which enables you to decrease your attachment is mumukshatva. To give up one's desires and experience and enjoy the bliss of detachment is mumukshatva. And how do we attain this? Swami says, if you have an intense desire to achieve this, there is nothing easier than this. We always feel that the world is attaching itself to us. But actually it is the opposite. We attach ourselves to the world. And Swami gives beautifully that story of how there is a way people try to trap monkeys. So what they do is they take a big pot with a narrow mouth and put something attractive inside that pot. And they put the pot where monkeys move about. The monkey, very eager to grab what is there in the pot, puts its hand into the earthen pot. And the monkey gets the material. But if the monkey has to release its hand from the pot by holding what it wants, then it will not be able to do so because the mouth of that vessel is narrow. If its fist is full of those nuts, then his fist gets bigger and he's unable to remove the fist from the bottle. The monkey cannot remove the hand. And now the monkey thinks that someone inside the pot is catching hold of its hand. But actually inside there is no one holding the monkey's hand. The problem is the monkey is holding to what is there inside. If the monkey can give up what is there inside, the monkey can happily release its hand and be free. Swami says, this whole world is like that. It is this enormous pot, this beautiful pot. We enter through this pot because we want something. We get selfish like the monkey. You want something. We want some of our desires to be fulfilled. But once we are in that process of wanting those desires and realizing that desire, that's when we get caught. If you give up the desire, then you are free. And Swami says, this is what is Vairagya. Vairagya does not mean giving up your home or your wife or children and going to the forest. It is just this attempt to reduce our desire, Swami says. Less luggage, more comfort, as Bhagwan used to always say. Less luggage, more comfort, make travel a pleasure. If we want to make the journey of our life light, bright and beautiful, then the best way is to know the transitoriness of everything around and reduce these desires, reduce these attachments, reduce the fulfillment of so many wants. If we do that, then slowly we'll be on this path of Vairagya. And it is through Vairagya, it is through this path of giving up that we will attain jnana. And that will lead us to the stage of true mukti, that Swami says, all these devamcha sambhutas, all these people who have come down, who take birth to fulfill their purpose and no act of theirs gets attached to them. Once their work is finished, then they attain Videha Mukti, as Swami says, transcorporeal mukti. So it's in the same manner, the process for each one of us, as Swami used to always say, sealing on desires. Swami knows that it's impossible for us to live a life without desires. Everybody needs to have something or the other. So that's why Bhagavan used to say, reduce your desires, less luggage. Reduce your desires and sublimate your desires. Whatever you want, can that be replaced with a nobler desire, with a higher desire, with a loftier ideal? Swami Vivekananda had two options. He could have led a beautiful worldly life, or he could have led a life as he was shown when he was small, a life which is much above that, a life where he goes above the materiality of the world. And that is how, when he chose that kind of a life, he not only emancipated his own life, but he emancipated the lives of generations of people on earth. We have to constantly tell our mind, oh mind, don't think about this thing in the world which is changing. Think about that which is unchanging. And if you constantly, as Swami says, focus on Atma and not on Anatma. Anything that is changing is Anatma. Anything that is permanent is Atma. So to keep that focus is what will help us in this journey. In fact, I will leave you with this very beautiful song that is part of the film on Swami Vivekananda, where we tell the mind, oh mind, go back to the permanent place. Don't get lost in this world which is completely ephemeral and completely changing. It's deluding. Go back to the source. It's a very beautiful song. As you listen to this song, let us think and pray to Bhagwan so that we can learn to sublimate our lower selves with higher ideals and slowly lead a life of more vairagya, more peace, so that renunciation becomes a part of our life and joy becomes the nature of our life. Thank you so much. I offer this little endeavor at Bhagwan's lotus feet with all gratitude and pray that he guides us in this beautiful journey of understanding his message and making our lives his message. Sai Ram.
परदेश में ओ परदेश में क्यों परदेसी रहे ए, चलो मन जाए घर अपने चलो मन जाए घर जो भाए वो कोरा सपना आँख जो भाए वो कोरा सपना सारे पराए हैं कोई ना अपना आँख जो भाए वो कोरा सपना सारे पराए हैं कोई ना अपना ऐसे झूठे प्रेम में पड़ना भूल में काहे जिए चलो मन जाए घर अपना चलो मन जाए घर अपने। साचे प्रेम की ज्योत जला के, साचे प्रेम की ज्योत जला के, मन सुन मेरी कान लगा के, साचे ज्योत जला के, मन सुन मेरी कान लगा के, पाप और पुण्य की गठरी उठा के अपनी राह चले, चलो मन जाए घर अपने, चलो मन जाए घर अपने। इस परदेश में ओ परदेश में क्यों परदेसी रहे, ए चलो मन जाए घर अपने, चलो अपने।